Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the show, I am joined by the former host of this podcast, John Ledyard. You can now find him over at thedraftnetwork.com, a great resource for the NFL draft, a new site that just launched at the beginning of August. They're just getting rolling now as the college season starts. And again, if you are a draft nick, if you like to follow these college players on their way to the NFL draft, head on over to thedraftnetwork.com. It's an unbelievably good resource. Today, he's going to talk about what he's seen from the Steelers this preseason, how he thinks this team projects going into the 2018 season. He's also going to give us an early look at some of the draft prospects Steeler fans should be looking out for this college season. But let's start today with some news and notes. Cutdown day is today. The deadline is 4 p.m. today, Saturday, for the Steelers to cut their roster down from 90 players all the way down to 53. They had, as of recording this, they had not released anyone yet, so all of those cuts going to happen today on Saturday. You know, follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country to get up-to-the-date news as far as who has been released. Again, Steelers.com will have that as well. But again, by 4 p.m. today, this roster will be cut from 90 to 53. According to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, Eli Rogers will start the season on the physically unable to perform list, the PUP list. Again, he's coming off of an ACL injury against the Jacksonville Jaguars in that playoff game in January. This was expected that he would start the year on PUP. What that means is that he's going to miss at least the first six games of the season. He will not count against the Steelers' 53-man roster, and he can come back at some point after those 6 weeks. So again, what happens to him after those 6 weeks is very interesting. And Twitter user Deep Foreboding wrote in with an interesting question: with the Switzer trade, don't you think Rodgers may have lost his spot completely? And it's an interesting thought because again, we talked about this yesterday when I did the 53-man roster prediction, right? Wide receiver is pretty obvious at this point that they're going to keep six. And those six are going to be Antonio Brown, James Washington, Juju Smith-Schuster, Justin Hunter, Darius Heyward-Bey, and Ryan Switzer. Ryan Switzer can be your kick returner, your punt returner, and also a slot receiver, kind of the backup to Juju. Now, Eli Rogers' spot on the roster was also as a slot receiver, and he also was the punt returner. So with Switzer coming in now, he's a better punt returner than Eli Rogers is. And he can also be a kick returner. So they're not going to cut Ryan Switzer to bring Eli Rogers back, or at least you don't think they would. And so at that point, are they willing to cut someone like Justin Hunter and then move Darius Heyward-Bey from, you know, what has been really a core special teamer only to being kind of your backup on the outside should anything happen to AB or James Washington? Are they willing to go the other way and cut Darius Heyward-Bey, who's been so good on special teams for so many years now, to bring in Eli Rogers back as a backup slot? And then, you know, at that point, are you really comfortable with one of your wide receivers, you know, being just like a Quadri Henderson on the roster where he doesn't really have a role at wide receiver? He's just a return specialist altogether because, again, you know, at slot, you're going to have Juju and Eli Rogers in kind of third string slot for Ryan Switzer. It's an interesting thought. And again, you know, the Steelers don't have to make that choice right now because, again, he can go on PUP. He does not have to count against the 53-man roster. And the Steelers have, you know, 6 weeks more to make that decision. And anything can happen throughout the season, right? So if there were an injury to Juju, if there were an injury to Ryan Switzer, of course, when Eli Rogers became healthy, that's a very easy choice. But when he comes off of PUP, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Eli Rogers and how they make a roster spot for him. I really don't think there's any chance they keep seven receivers. And so we'll see what happens when he comes off PUP. No Dobbs trade yesterday. That could still happen today on Saturday. You know, again, I think Dobbs played very well on Thursday. I think he's going to be on a practice squad somewhere at least. I think there is a good chance he gets traded today to someone else on a 53-man roster. I don't think it's likely the Steelers keep him, but again, he can be, if he goes through waivers, I think he ends up on another team. If he can also get traded, and if none of that happens, at the very least, he's going to end up on someone's practice squad. No sign of Le'Veon Bell yet. Friday of last year is when he showed up to the Steeler facility. He ended up signing his franchise tag on Monday of last year, so here we are now on Saturday, no sign of Le'Veon Bell. Now, again, no reason to worry just yet. Again, he didn't sign the franchise tag until Monday of last year. He didn't practice until Monday of last year. So, you know, again, if he shows up on Saturday, shows up on Sunday, Again, he can still sign that franchise tag before Monday, and we're not anywhere behind where we were a year ago. But if we get to Monday and there's still no sign of Le'Veon Bell, maybe we can start worrying about just when Le'Veon Bell is going to show up. And then finally, there are still some trade rumors swirling around Khalil Mack, the elite pass rusher on the Oakland Raiders. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network tweeting that there is a robust trade market developing for Khalil Mack. Of course, Khalil Mack going through a contract dispute with the Oakland Raiders. He has sat out the entirety of preseason training camp, all of it. Will he show up for week one? Will he not? Look, this is one of the best pass rushers in the league. Maybe the best pass rusher coming off the edge. The Steeler fans are desperate to get a player like Khalil Mack on this roster. I just, you know, from my perspective, look, it would be very unlike the Steelers to make this trade. They just don't do this kind of thing, bringing in someone. Both from a compensation to the Raiders perspective, the Raiders wanting, reportedly, according to Pro Football Talk, two first-rounders for Khalil Mack. I don't think this team would trade one first-rounder for Khalil Mack. There's no way they trade two. And then again, the salary compensation that Khalil Mack wants, over $20 million per season. Again, we just saw the Steelers balk at the idea of giving Le'Veon Bell more than $14 million a season, and the guaranteed money that they gave him was, you know, or that offered him was significantly lower than he will likely get on the open market a year from now. So the Khalil Mack contract negotiation will probably go somewhat similarly, right? You know, there's no way they're going to give Khalil Mack an insane amount of signing bonus, which is likely what he's going to want. So again, I think it's very unlikely that this team brings in Khalil Mack, but it is something to keep an eye on this weekend. All right, let's welcome back to the show the former host of this podcast. You can now find him over at thedraftnetwork.com, where he's both a writer and the COO. And you can also find him on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. John Ledyard, welcome back to Locked On Steelers.
Hey, Tony. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Love having you on the show. You know, we are just now a week away from the start of the regular season. What have you seen so far from this defense in the preseason? You know, have the Steelers, do you feel like the Steelers have done enough to get this defense back into title contention?
No, I don't think they have. I think it's going to be probably a concern all season. The good news is that the offense, I mean, to me, when I look at it on paper, at least, you know, this should be, this is a chance to be better than last year's group, for sure, better in execution and probably even better in talent-wise. So I think that's the exciting part, is that even if the defense is worse or doesn't take the strides that we kind of hoped that they would, hopefully the offense is able to offset that. I mean, last year, probably the most talented group in the league, and just never really came together. There were some glimpses in certain games, obviously, but on a consistent basis, you know, that was just never there. And they got this great offensive line, and they've played together for forever. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger seems to still not be in a decline, really. And, you know, Le'Veon Bell coming back, and the depth in the backfield's better. James Washington should be better than Martavis Bryant, and Juju should be better than Juju last year, you would think, with another year under his belt. And so, yeah, all things on that side of the ball kind of point positively, but defensively, yeah, I mean, I think there's still some real concerns, and I think you saw a lot of that happen in preseason. Much better in the third preseason game, which is obviously encouraging. It was John Bostic's best game, but yeah, there are significant concerns at linebacker, significant concerns at safety, and when you're weak down the middle of the field and vulnerable down the middle of the field, plus, you know, the schematic issues that Keith Butler's deployed and had struggles with in the past, they've also shown up some in the preseason as well. So when those things don't really change, and if there's one thing I've knocked the Steelers for, it's that not really changing in the ways that you need to best fit your players or to just learn from mistakes and change what you're doing because it's not working. That's been something that really hasn't happened very well during the Mike Tomlin era. So that's probably the main cause for concern heading into the season.
So your concerns defensively, you said inside linebacker, safety, yeah, how do you feel about a guy like, you know, I know a lot of Steeler fans are putting all of their hopes at inside linebacker on a guy like Matthew Thomas, an undrafted free agent. We saw him play out there with the starters. Is there any chance that, you know, that translates into the regular season, that you could see Matthew Thomas being a contributor in some way during the regular season as well?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is a chance of that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been out there, would be my thinking. Also, in the preseason, he was pretty average, but there's more athleticism to kind of make up for mistakes. And, you know, the Steelers value speed on the defensive side of the ball right now. So I get it more or less about, I think it's less about what he's done and more about the fact that Tyler Matakiewicz has just been horrendous.
Yeah.
And Bostic has not been much better, to be honest. So it's kind of searching for answers, and you never know. Like, if those guys continue to hurt the team, he's going to need to have some reps to at least be acclimated enough to potentially step in and make an impact. So, you know, I get why they're doing it. I think it's probably smart to be prepared. It's just really unfortunate that we'd be in that situation where he would have to maybe start just because they don't have any other viable options, when they knew both going into the offseason and going into the draft that this was, it's not like somebody got hurt. They knew this position was going to be a major concern, and really didn't take enough steps to adequately put a player on the field that's starting caliber in the NFL. And so that part to me is pretty disappointing.
And then at safety, what have you seen so far from Morgan Burnett and his ability to play strong safety on this team?
Man, I thought he would be a lot better. I'm kind of bummed out. I thought that was a really good signing that it happened. I hope he gets his feet under him a little bit there, because I mean, it just a couple opportunities to make plays only so far, but he's kind of blown some chances and really poor. He honestly looks like his athleticism shot, and that's super concerning to me. And I wonder if I heard whispers that kind of Green Bay thought his best football was behind him. And I know he's not super old yet. I think, what is he, 29 or something?
Yeah.
But it just seemed like, I just don't know if he can move like he needs to be able to. You know, there were a couple plays in space where he's coming up to as a run defender to fill, and the runner just moves laterally, not even like a sharp cut, just moves laterally. In week one, I think it was a runner, and then in week two, it was a receiver, and he just really struggled to, like, move laterally with the ball carrier and make a stop in space. Just kind of showed to me that, like, I have concerns for sure about what he's able to do in space, and, you know, we've seen him miss some tackles and miss some stops and be late on some fills, and I just thought he would be, like, kind of a sure guiding presence for them, and definitely doesn't have the range of ball skills you want in a free safety, for sure. You know, you'd hope that he could play some type of role around line of scrimmage and in the slot, but here really is the issue with the Steelers safeties. And really, you know, I wasn't high on Terrell Edmonds, but even if Edmonds ends up being a good player, the way the Steelers are currently using him, you know, you drafted a big slot defender for man coverage responsibilities that is going to play at least early on situationally, and you drafted him in the first round. And that is what hurts, because you needed a free safety. You lost Mike Mitchell. That's what you needed. If you're going to continue to play a lot of single high coverage, you need a free safety. And Sean Davis looked really rough in that role in week one. I've never seen traits in processing that kind of project well to a free safety role. You know, Burnett's athleticism is already kind of going, and he can't cover the kind of ground. And really, that's never been his preferable position, you know, throughout his career. So you're asking a guy, a veteran guy who's proven he can do other things at a higher level, to play his worst spot. So that was another issue with the Edmonds pick that makes this whole thing complicated, is that even if Edmonds turns out to be a good player for them this season, they still have this huge hole at free safety, and they took a guy who's going to be more of a situational player rather than every down player back on the back end of the defense. So, you know, that's to me is the big concern, is that they didn't get better at the biggest weakness that they had, and now it still looks like a big concern heading into the season too.
Yeah, so in your mind, could Terrell Edmonds then, I mean, you know, the deficiencies that Morgan Burnett has kind of right now in his career, right? Do you see, is this a thing where Terrell Edmonds could, you know, we get into week 8, week 9, week 10 into the regular season, you think Edmonds can take over as a starter on this defense?
You know, I would say from watching Edmonds, no, but from watching the other guys, I would say maybe yes. You know, I know it sounds like I'm being negative Nancy here. You know, Edmonds, there have been flashes. You know, he had a good camp from what everybody said. It sounded really positive.
Yeah.
You know, I was there one day. He, of course, didn't play well the day that I was there. So, you know, I didn't even say anything on social media, because I was just like, people are just going to think it's confirmation bias. But yeah, he got beat a couple times that day. So, it was, you know, I was like, okay, well, let's see what he does in the games. And in week one, I watched all of the snaps, and, you know, I thought that he was fine. You know, he wasn't really targeted.
Right.
Very basic, you know, zone coverage, spot dropping into the flat responsibilities, nothing very complicated. And it was like, okay, well, we're going to have to ask him to do a little tougher things probably. But he looked fine in this way, made a good stop and run defense. And then week two was really rough. He missed a big-time tackle in space, kind of out of control as a tackler. I think it resulted in a first down. Then obviously got just the inability to find and play the football, especially in the Jimmy Graham touchdown, was pretty much mirrored what I saw in college. Just not a lot of awareness or instincts for him. You know, athletic tool, size, great, but not a lot of awareness to make plays on the ball. And then I thought the second touchdown he allowed was a little bit of a tougher one. I'd like to see him play through the hands better, but, you know, I thought he was in pretty good position on that one. So all in all, you know, I mean, it was a very rough second week, and then he obviously had the interception in the third preseason game. So, and it was a good play. You know, he hustled, he stuck with his guy. You know, it was good awareness in that situation, you know, so in a play that kind of, you know, was a scramble drill in some way. So I think that you're talking about upside, right? You're talking about playmaking ability. You know, if Edmonds is out there, I have no doubt in my mind he's going to get beat and give up big plays. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of up and down to his play at best. You know, at best, I think he's kind of an up and down type of player. But if the highs are high, I can deal with that. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, if they can get a guy on the field who can turn the ball over, you know, that helps the defense, because really they don't have that type of player. They haven't had that type of player. And so I think that would be a big step for that defense in the right direction, even if he can give them something like that.
Now, tackling has been a concern on this defense for a while. Certainly against the way they ended last year against Jacksonville, we saw some poor tackling in the first couple preseason games, better against the Tennessee Titans. Are you worried at all, you know, as far as, you know, they bring in Bostic, they bring in Burnett, these guys are supposed to be better tacklers. You think this team's going to improve in that way in 2018?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that you didn't see it the first 2 weeks, but then I thought it was much better last week. So it's a good step in the right direction. One of the big issues is they don't have as many good athletes as they've had in the past, you know, especially linebacker. That's not really Vince Williams. That's not really John Bostic. Even Morgan Burnett, if he's going to be starting, like, you know, he's a drop-off athletically from typical Mike Mitchell. I know Mike Mitchell's did look like he was starting to lose his athleticism last year, but still ahead of one, I think, Morgan Burnett's offered in the preseason. Joe Hayden, you know, again, his athleticism, his speed, like, not really been what it is. So it's there probably will be less out-of-control type of tackle attempts. I will say this, too. I think there aren't a lot of teams in the NFL that tackle really well, and the teams that do tackle really well are typically the best teams in the league. Pittsburgh has been one of the best teams in the league but has not tackled very well. So I think that discrepancy really magnifies the issue in fans' minds. I don't think they necessarily tackle a lot worse than other teams in the NFL. I think they tackle bad for a good team, if that makes sense. So I think that some of that will still be in place this year. Overall, I mean, guys that have had kind of chronic issues with missed tackles, you know, Shazier, when he was here, he obviously won't be in the starting lineup, but obviously you lose a ton with him not being on the field. So you know, he could miss a couple tackles, but he made splash plays, so you made up for it. Stephon Tuitt, it's got to be better. You know, it was bad in the preseason so far. So he played really well in the third preseason game, but he's not tackled very well throughout his career. He's not finished well throughout his career. You know, Tyler Matakiewicz, you saw plenty of struggles so far in preseason with getting guys on the ground, but also just being able to play in space. Seeing that with Morgan Burnett, Joe Hayden missed a tackle and run defense. So I think that there are definitely issues that are still going to creep up with this team. And, you know, two of the biggest missed tackle guys I didn't even mention are Artie Burns and Sean Davis. So to me, you added, and Terrell Edmonds had big tackling issues in college too. Has only shown up once or twice in preseason action. So he's looked better in that regard, I think, than I expected him to. So, but basically the Steelers have continued to add players who are high variance in their ability to finish both on the ball and as tacklers. So you can definitely expect those types of issues to continue, I think.
The Steelers led the league in sacks a year ago, but that came from having 12.5 from Cam Hayward, which, you know, in a 3-4 defense, to have your 3-4 defensive end lead the team in sacks, kind of crazy, although he is, Cam Hayward, an incredible player. 8 of those came from Vince Williams at the inside linebacker spot, 4 of them from Mike Hilton at the slot corner position, and yet the Steelers, known as this kind of outside linebacker factory for so many years, they switched the sides now of Bud Dupree and TJ Watt. Two-part question here. One, do you think, Can a Steeler outside linebacker get back to being a double-digit sack guy? And do you think the Steelers' pass rush is going to be as formidable in 2018 as it was in 2017?
Good question. Do I think a guy can get double-digit sacks off the edge for the Steelers? Yes, I think TJ Watt can. I don't know if it'll happen this year, but I think by year 3. I liked enough of what I saw from him. And here's the thing. Watt is such a good athlete, and they're going to move him around. They're going to do things that are going to get him some unblocked opportunities for sacks. So, you know, he may have double-digit sacks. He may not be beating guys 1v1 to the level that I'd like, but just by being a good athlete and having a hot motor, he's going to be able to chase guys down and get sacks. And that's how he got most of his sacks last year. What did he have, six or seven last year? And most of those sacks came in the hustle variety. You know, like he wasn't necessarily beating guys cleanly, but I mean, you can even think and picture the sacks, you know, against the Browns early in the season, you know, it was a couple hustle sacks. Joe Flacco late in the Ravens game was hustle sack. He had an unblocked sack against Andy Dalton, you know, where he came, he was actually dropped in coverage and he came running up from coverage to Zach Dalton. So, I mean, there's been lots of plays like that for Watt. That's how he got a lot of his production. I think that kind of stuff will continue for him just because he is such a good athlete. So I think he has that potential, but you really, what you want to see is pressure plus production. And I think that's where Watt, it gets interesting because Watt, you know, can he beat guys 1v1? Can he get pressure on a consistent basis? You know, it's one thing to get an unblocked sack when the other team blows it. It's another thing to do your job well and beat a guy 1v1 and get pressure when you have four rushers. And that's where Pittsburgh's rush or sack numbers are really interesting because, you know, from watching and just in general, they have not had much success as a pass rushing team 4v5, you know, as just a team that rushes forward, and especially when they rush three, they're just really not able to get, you know, if they did, it was almost always Cam Hayward, especially last year. Stephon Tua was pretty much not a factor. It was a disappointing year for him. They didn't have anybody who won 1v1 off the edge consistently. So the Steelers have to blitz a ton. So we see the good results show up in sacks. You see the bad results show up in the fact that they allow a ton of passing yards and pretty much even bad quarterback, you know, torched them at times last year. We saw the issues against Brett Hundley and Jacoby Brissett, and Marcus Mariota had a terrible season, you know, still made some plays down the field. So, you know, there is definitely a lot of elements to evaluating the Steelers based on their sack numbers. You know, they're not, I would not say they're a very good pass rushing team in terms of being able to beat guys 1v1 outside of Cam Hayward, but I would say they are a great team at scheming pressure. You know, I've had a lot of issues with Keith Butler. I think he's done a great job of scheming pressure and getting air in a variety of ways. You mentioned Mike Hilton and the sacks. I mean, what do you have? It's like three sacks against the Texans. I mean, that stuff just doesn't happen. So will they be a better pass rushing team? I think yes, because I think a fully healthy Stephon Tuitt and T.J. Watt with another year under his belt makes them a better pass rushing team. Will they have the same sack numbers as last year? Probably not, but hopefully they generate pressure in a 4v5 fashion in a better rate. You know, I don't think it's sustainable to expect Vince Williams to have 8 sacks every year. That's very rare for an off-ball linebacker. I don't think it's sustainable for Mike Hilton to have 4 sacks. So I think that there's some of that that deserves mention too when we talk about all this, but I think they can be a better team from a pass rush standpoint in terms of winning 1v1, and they really need to be. Watt and Tuitt especially need to be. I mean, I think they still have hope for Dupree probably more than I do, but I think those guys really need to be the difference makers that they were drafted to be this year. And if they're not, I would say that really significantly derails Pittsburgh's chances of being the AFC champion or being in the Super Bowl.
So you're off the Bud Dupree hype train at all, right? I mean, there's, in your mind, even though he looks like he's going to be healthy this year at least, right? There's no chance that he can kind of turn the corner as a, well, no pun intended there, as an outside rusher.
You know, I mean, can he get better? Sure, you know, but I mean, if you draft an edge defender in the first round, you know, to me, it's a failure if he's not a double digit sack guy, and I don't know that I see that from Bud Dupree. You know, so I think over the years, if you look at edge guys who've been drafted in the first round, I know he was a little bit later, early 20s, but you know, if you look at that range of the draft, you know, you're seeing double digit sack guys, or you're seeing guys that have underachieved. You know, there's not much in between. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think, you know, it's not like he's a horrible player. You know, he just wasn't worth the first rounder when they took him, and I said that when they took him, and I don't think he's been worth the first rounder since then. You know, there's just a lot of issues with his ability to win 1v1, and even when he has gotten production for the Steelers, it's almost always been in a hustle or an unblocked variety or off a twist. So again, you're having to scheme a guy clean as a pass rusher that you drafted to be able to win 1v1 and be able to create pressure on his own. So, you know, it just, and then you see the result when Bud Dupree gets a sack on a twist. But what people don't notice is the 3 or 4 times the Steelers tried the same twist and had Stephon Tuitt wrapping to the edge and lost contain because they didn't have a more athletic player on the edge against the mobile quarterback. Those are the things that kind of slipped through the cracks. So you're having to do all these things schematically to get your first round guy clean who you drafted to be able to win cleanly on his own. So that kind of is the issue with Bud Dupree, is that when you don't have guys that can meet their expectations, you end up doing things schematically to help them out that really you could have gotten a guy in the third or fourth that helped them out schematically, and they could have finished off some of these unblocked opportunities. So that is kind of the frustrating part with Bud Dupree, is that it hasn't come along for him like it should have in terms of being a corner and pass rusher. Where Bud Dupree was always going to win as a pass rusher to me wasn't so much as being able to corner consistently, because he never had great bend. That was an issue in college. It showed up in his three cone result, you know, but he was so explosive and so fast that I thought he could sell speed to the edge and win with counter moves back inside. And we almost never see him deploy like a quick counter move. So, you know, I have heard much criticism throughout other people, throughout trainers, throughout other people in the league, that the Steelers don't work on pass rush enough in practices. Having been at practices, both at OTAs and minicamp and training camp for years, I can absolutely confirm that. You know, they just don't work. I mean, Joey Porter just does not work on it. So, to me, it's a coaching failure in the fact that that's, after quarterback play, that's the most important aspect of the NFL, is pass rush and the ability to win 1v1. So, were Bud Dupree somewhere else, I would probably have more hope. But as long as Joey Porter's there, I don't think that's going to be a focus for them. And I don't think that a lot of the things he needs to work on are being worked on. So in that capacity, he can do stuff in the offseason, but when you get into training camp and you're not focusing on that stuff anymore, it becomes tough, and it becomes really tough to project him to more success this season, knowing that that's the kind of coaching that's happening there.
Last thing defensively, you know, with all the defensive backs the Steelers brought in this offseason, Morgan Burnett, Terrell Edmonds, Marcus Allen, right? I mean, there's been so much talk about how many defensive backs can this team even put on the field at the same time. And during camp, we saw this new dollar defense, right? Seven defensive backs on the field at the same time. In your mind, is this just a specialty third and long time defense? Could we see this defense deployed in other ways? Are you excited about this at all?
I guess I am excited to see what it does. I mean, any chance to get one of these linebackers off the field, or multiple linebackers off the field, is probably a good thing. But, you know, you're opening yourself up for sure, you know. Okay, so now you're taking the guy that calls the defense off the field. You know, in those situations, you're opening yourself up to some communication issues. The Steelers have tried some wild packages before defensively. It's not really gone in their favor, you know, and they continue to deploy some of them. You know, that 4-3 look where they drop one of the outside linebackers off the ball. That statistically, I know, according to Alex Kozora, Steelers Depot's charting and stuff, has been a really unsuccessful defensive look for them, and they've just continued to deploy it. So, you know, that kind of stuff is what I mentioned at the outset of the podcast, not learning from mistakes. I'm fine with wanting to try new things, but you got to know when it doesn't work, and you got to be able to move on from it. So it's an interesting idea. It gets more speed on the field. They have a lot of big safeties, Burnett, Marcus Allen, if he makes the team, Edmonds. So I think that there's a lot of potential for a formation like that to work, but how often are you going to deploy? You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, you know, you couldn't do it on 3rd and 7, probably, even, you know, have no linebackers on the field type of thing. So, you know, you'd have to be a very situational type of usage. And certainly in those spots, I'd be anxious to see it. I mean, especially if some of these guys that I would love to see Allen make the team. You know, I didn't think a lot of him as a prospect, but I think he has the size to play like a, you know, pseudo linebacker type of role. So, you know, I think that it depends kind of who makes the team, because, you know, Nat Beere or whatever his name is, like, he, you know, he's not going to help you in that type of role. Like, those guys aren't going to help you. So it will depend a little bit on how healthy guys are and what their availability is, because if you're going to put that many defensive backs on the field, they've got to be guys that you really trust to be on the field in any situation. And so that'll be key in terms of the coaching and determining which players are up for those kind of responsibilities.
On the offensive side, you know, you talked about it at the start, right? This can be a very explosive, a very good offense. I think one of the interesting storylines on the offense is this Le'Veon Bell situation, and specifically how they're going to use Le'Veon Bell in 2018, given the fact that he didn't sign a long-term deal. And so, you know, Tomlin likes to use that expression, you know, we're going to run the wheels off this guy, right? I mean, it seems like with Le'Veon Bell, knowing that he's not going to be on the team in 2019, they don't have to worry about, you know, this guy as far as his longevity in the league, right? They can run him the 400 carries or whatever if they need to. But given James Conner's play in the preseason, is there a chance you think the Steelers change course and have somewhat of a less workload for Le'Veon Bell, especially early in the season, given what we've seen from James Conner?
I think early in the season, yeah, first couple games. After that, no. But, you know, I do agree with you. Conner's been great. I've really enjoyed watching him play. I think he's really reshaped his body even from Pitt and made himself more explosive as a result of shedding some pounds and really looks capable as a receiver, exciting as a receiver. You know, he's not Le'Veon Bell, of course, but, you know, I think that he really has potential to be a piece of the Steelers' rushing attack, you know, if Le'Veon Bell were to not be here. Now, with Le'Veon Bell in the mix, just because of his conditioning, and you're right, the fact that he's definitely not going to be with Pittsburgh after the season, there's really no incentive for Pittsburgh in terms of being able to rest him, unless they're thinking about resting him for the playoffs. So, I mean, I would definitely love to see a little bit taken off Bell's plate. I would, you know, but he's still going to play more than any other running back in the league, probably, other than maybe Gurley. So, you know, you're going to see a good bit of him no matter what. But I definitely think, yeah, James Conner has proven he can handle responsibilities this season, and he's ready to contribute, and he looks great even coming off the injury. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see, and I hope at least early in the season he gets some run while Bell's still getting up to speed.
And then the biggest change this offense made during the offseason was, of course, trading Martavis Bryant to the Oakland Raiders and replacing him with James Washington, the second-round pick out of Oklahoma State. There were some question marks early about, you know, how early would James Washington contribute to this team. He's looked terrific in preseason, the combat catches that he's made, not just in preseason games, but in training camp as well. It's spectacular. How much, though, I mean, Steeler fans are getting so hyped up about James Washington right now. How much can we realistically expect out of James Washington in this offense in 2018?
Yeah, if all he does is win vertically and win contested catches, that's all the Steelers should care about. I mean, you have Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster do everything else. You know, if all Martavis did was win vertically and make, you know, big catches down the field in contested spots, it would have been fun. He just didn't do that, and so that's where James Washington's skill set, I think, really becomes, you know, something that the Steelers coveted in the draft, and you get why, and you see why in the preseason so far. Now, preseason week three was disappointing for Washington. You know, didn't do a lot, didn't get a lot of run and with the first team, and so it kind of has opened up question marks as how much is he going to play early on in the season. I have no idea. I have no doubt that he'll be wide receiver three, you know, once the season really gets underway, but week one, week two, you know, are they trotting Hayward Bay out there just for kicks? I kind of think it's silly to do that. I would love to see a lot of James Washington in those spots. You know, there's going to be concerns with James Washington. He's not a great athlete. I don't think he's unbelievable after the catch, and I think separation in terms of a complex type of route tree and breaking out, breaking stuff, back to the ball stuff, I think there will be some level of concern with him in that. But the dude knows how to win down the field, and he knows how to use his body. He's got those really long arms despite not being the biggest receiver. He goes up, he attacks the football in the air, he uses his frame well, he's got strong hands. So, you know, there's enough traits there that if James Washington were the number one guy in Pittsburgh, I'd be super concerned. The number three guy, you know, potentially four if you're counting Bell, you know, who knows what Vance McDonald brings to the table. He just has to do his job well, and I think that's where it becomes exciting in terms of projecting him with the Steelers, is that this is an offense that likes to go vertical, likes to get down the field. Ben, especially when his deep ball kind of came back last season, is one of the best deep ball passers in the league. You know, he's had an unbelievable deep ball his whole career. He's going to give Washington tons of chances to make plays on the ball. What we need is more time of those two playing together, and we didn't really get a ton of that in the preseason. So that is the one concern I do have, is that we've seen Ben talk about how important that is with Marcus Wheaton in the past, how important it is with Martavis Bryant, how important it's been with Eli Rogers, and we've seen him struggle to connect with those guys, honestly, you know, to struggle to get in a rhythm, you know, with those guys and get to a point where he feels comfortable with them. We've heard him talk about how much it matters playing and practicing with Antonio Brown all the time, and how quickly he felt comfortable with Juju Smith-Schuster last year, and Smith-Schuster got a lot of run with the number one, even as far back as minicamp. So the fact that hasn't happened for Washington is a level of concern, because I believe Ben really is a trust type of quarterback, and he needs to develop that in his receivers to feel really comfortable with him.
Another player that could have been considered a new player in 2018 would have been Vance McDonald. Of course, the tight end the Steelers brought in at the end of preseason last year from the 49ers, spent the majority of 2018 on and off the injury report, although he had a fantastic game against Jacksonville. I have maintained all offseason that a healthy Vance McDonald could be a real difference maker on this team as well. Are we at a point now with Vance McDonald where you just can't trust him from an injury perspective? And if he is healthy, do you think he can be a real difference maker on this offense?
Yeah, it's hard to say about the injuries. You know, I mean, if they're just holding him out for precautionary reasons or to let him get to 100%, you know, no reason, he might be able to play or not. I don't know. You know, if that's the case, that's fine. That I'm not really more concerned than I've been in the past. So We'll see. I mean, this season will definitely answer that question. In terms of what he can be, absolutely. I mean, he can be dynamic for this team. He can be, you know, a better version of whatever they thought Ladarius Green would give them. You know, he can be the vertical downfield threat. He's a really polished route runner. I thought he was terrific as a blocker last season, better than Jesse James. Great on the move as a blocker, which is huge for the Steelers offense running so much counter. So I think that I love what he brings to the table. I think he's perfect for Pittsburgh. It's just a matter of him. He has to stay on the field. And obviously the drops are frustrating, but let's be honest, the Steelers have had tons of high variance receivers over the years, you know, from Wheaton to, you know, to Sammy Coates, even Martavis Bryant, obviously at times, you know, there's been tons, you know, Antonio Brown is the only guy who really hasn't been high variance at some degree. Even Juju's had a couple bad drops in the preseason and in practices and gotten yelled at. So, I mean, people are going to blow it up because it was a move to get Vance Joseph or Vance McDonald. It was a trade to get him. So you gave something up. So every time he struggles, people are going to be like, we gave up, you know, a fourth or whatever it was for Vance McDonald. Well, you know, the dude is going to make plays for you too. He just has to be on the field. So he'll probably always drop the ball some, but it'll probably always be frustrating. But, you know, a lot of good receivers in the league have dropped the ball. The key is going to be, can he make the splash plays to make up for those drops? And the other thing I love about Vance McDonald, competitive after the catch and has real ability in space after the catch, that's not common amongst tight ends. If you look across the league, even a lot of the good ones are not great, particularly after the catch. So the fact that he can give that to the offense, really, you know, playmaker with the ball in his hands, another guy like that who's in the middle of the field, you know, who is going to be in some mismatch opportunities where he's a better athlete, I love that part of his skill set.
Where do you think the Steelers fit right now in the AFC? Of course, last year the Patriots gave them fits, the Jaguars gave them fits. Those seem to be their two biggest competitors in the AFC. But where do you think the Steelers fit in the AFC picture overall?
Yeah, the AFC will be better this season, but it's still pretty bad, and it's definitely worse than the NFC. You know, I mean, so automatically already better than everybody in the AFC East, other than New England. More talented than everyone in the AFC North for sure. Should be no issue in terms of winning a division title again. Will it be? Is difficult to say because we've seen this team give themselves lots of problems before in the regular season and not get into a position where they could be the top seed in the conference. So, you know, they could be the top seed in the conference. They could be a wild card. Nothing between that would surprise me for the Steelers. It surprised me to see them miss the playoffs, obviously. But I think nothing between that would kind of surprise me because you've seen them lose some games they shouldn't in the past, and it's hurt their chances to get a higher seed. So, you know, Cincinnati will be better than last year for sure. Cleveland will be better than last year. The Ravens don't have as many injuries, so they'll be better. But, you know, the Steelers still have a significant talent edge over those teams, in my opinion. So, I mean, I think you're talking about being a top four seed in the AFC for sure. You know, Kansas City will be good, but their defense is really a big concern, you know, Kansas City's never really given Pittsburgh much to worry about. The keys are still going to be New England and Jacksonville. And I think Tennessee's a tough team. I know the Steelers have done really well against Tennessee, really well against Marcus Mariota, so it's not super concerning for Pittsburgh, in my opinion. But they are a tough team. I think they're going to be a tough team this year, you know, especially if Mariota plays well. I know he didn't play well the other day in preseason game, but I think that they have a chance to be a real upstart team. You know, I'm not buying into the Chargers just because I think they're cursed. And I think the Broncos still have a ways to go. And, you know, the Raiders are kind of a mess right now, I think. So, yeah, the AFC is still pretty weak, no doubt about it. The teams to watch are, you know, even the teams with exciting young quarterbacks like the Texans, you know, there's so many concerns defensively, but honestly more so than that on the offensive line and in the run game. And, you know, so I think that they still have enough holes that it's hard to see, you know, it's hard to see it not being New England and Pittsburgh and Jacksonville again next year in the AFC. Now, the NFC, tons could change. But in the AFC, I really don't see that things have changed a ton where those shouldn't be your top three teams again this season.
And then the Steelers open week one against the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland, of course, continuing to amass talent year after year, and yet have never been able to do anything with it. Do you think, should the Steelers fans be worried at all about, you know, the Steelers sometimes play down to their opponents, right? You're going to Cleveland week one. There's so much excitement in Cleveland. Is there a chance there that in week one, this team could actually be upset by the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I mean, they should have been upset last year, to be honest. And Cleveland was a disaster in the way that they came out of that game. But, I mean, if Antonio Brown doesn't make that crazy catch on that third down play, you know, I mean, where I threw down prayer that Ben just kind of threw up that honestly should have been intercepted. If it wasn't for Antonio Brown just in general, the Steelers would have lost to Cleveland, and they might have lost handily last year. So absolutely they can lose. I mean, you never know with a team like Cleveland, like a new season, like when does that new mindset kind of click in? Like, because they have tons of talent. Talent-wise, they're not going to be among the worst teams the Steelers play. And, you know, if that confidence is there and, you know, they get Todd Haley, who knows the Steelers very well, and, you know, I mean, that Steelers defense is worse than it was last year, I think, in terms of talent. So, you know, you don't think Haley's going to know tons of ways to exploit that? For sure he will. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge game for Cleveland, too. You know, they're going to be up for that game. Pittsburgh was not up for that week one game last year. They'd beaten Cleveland for so long. I wonder if, you know, it just kind of sets in the minds of players. We've seen them not get up for games against, you know, perceived lesser opponents. So, for sure, I think it's very possible they lose that game to Cleveland. You know, now, the Steelers have tons of talent. They should be able to throw the ball over the yard against the Brown secondary, you know, and they have the group up front to be able to handle them in pass protection. So, you know, it's not like they match up poorly with Cleveland on paper. They don't. They match up well, but it's all about that energy, right, that you come out with and the mindset and the schematics. The schematics are huge, you know. If you're asking me which coach I trust to scheme, I trust Todd Haley's scheme a lot better than I do Keith Butler. So, yeah, I think absolutely it's a concerning game, and it's one to watch. And, yeah, starting 0-1 and 0-1 in your division to a team that probably isn't going to win the division, yeah, that's definitely a concern to start the season. So, I mean, it's not how you want to go out there. So, hopefully the focus is there and the Steelers execute and take care of business.
All right, then, before we get out of here, I want to congratulate you on the launch of thedraftnetwork.com. It is a fantastic resource. Let's talk about the 2019 draft, right? The Steelers clearly are going to have a hole at running back going into the 2019 draft, and probably inside linebacker as well as another position they're going to want to address. Who are some players Steeler fans should be watching this college season that may end up in black and gold in April of next year?
Yeah, so I'll just talk about running back, linebacker, and edge defender, and then if you want to add another position, you know, feel free. But I think that they don't get more pass rush production out of Dupree and even Watt this season, you've got to start thinking about adding another guy there. To me, the name's the watcher. I think he ends up going too high for the Steelers, but you never know at this point in the process. So I'll throw the names out there. But Brian Burns from Florida State, I mean, big-time ability to bend the edge and play with speed, but also he also weighs more stout than you'd think against the run for a guy that was 230 last season, reportedly up to 245 this year, and I think he offers a ton of traits. That would be huge in Pittsburgh. Montez Sweat from Mississippi State is another guy to definitely have an eye on. Both of those two guys I like a lot. And then Ben Banigal from TCU is a guy either back end of the first or second or third round, you know, depending on how much progress he makes this season. A lot of raw high athletic traits that I could definitely see Pittsburgh being very interested in, a guy who could play from a two-point stance and be a 3-4 guy. So those guys make a lot of sense on the edge. At linebacker, I think you're dealing with a pretty significant drop-off right now after the first two or three names. Patty Fisher from Northwestern is a guy that has 6'4", 245, great size. How elite of an athlete he is the big question mark. I think he's a good athlete. He's a great athlete. He's only a redshirt sophomore, too. No guarantee he comes out whatsoever. So let's put him on the back burner because we know Pittsburgh ain't drafting him if he isn't a great athlete. And let's think about Devin White from LSU, you know, a guy that started his first season last year, did some good things, clearly has some ways to go in terms of mental processing, but size and athleticism, right where you want him to be. So definitely a guy I think Pittsburgh will be interested in. And then Mack Wilson from Alabama played terrific against Georgia in the national championship game. His first two starts at Alabama came against Clemson and against Georgia in the college football playoff. And he was really good against Clemson and great against Georgia, especially late in the game. So ton of potential there. I think he could be a guy that definitely works his way and even assign the top 15 or 20 picks. I mean, he plus great in coverage right away, which would be huge for Pittsburgh. So a guy that I absolutely would, if you ask me one player right now that I'd love to just take from college football and put in Pittsburgh after this season, right now what I would say would be Mack Wilson, just because I think he can be exactly what they kind of need for that second-level defender. And then I think, you know, with the other position I said, linebacker, edge pass rusher, and running back. With running back, Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma is honestly the only guy I think, not only that could be a first rounder now, I think he's the only one I've seen with even first round potential. So it's a thin class then. That's a little bit troubling considering you're going to lose Le'Veon Bell. You know, I think you can find ways to replace a running back, but the Bell's receiving ability and pass protection, that's where you're going to have to find a way to kind of replicate what he does there. But I think Anderson's a great fit if he's there in the back end of the first. I mean, he's caught the ball better and better during his time at Oklahoma. Last year really started to catch it better as the year went on. I think we'll see him increase in that role. Pass protection's got to get better for sure. But, you know, contact balance is there as a runner, has the burst and explosiveness. I think division will improve. It's improving already, and I think it'll continue to improve. So, you know, it's a potential for that. I mean, a lot of people are mocking him to the Steelers right now because my guess is he comes off the board somewhere between 20 and 40. But, again, we're so far out. But he's the only one I've even seen that I would say even has the potential to go round one. So we go from a great running back class to really great running back classes in a row to a really down class, and then it'll be back up again in 2020.
Interesting. So Bryce Love, in your eyes, not a first-round pick?
No, I would be surprised. You know, I know people may balk at that are college football fans because, you know, the great production, but yeah, the size is going to be a concern for people. You know, he might be a little over 200 right now, but he also doesn't do the things as a receiver that Christian McCaffrey did. And so that's, you know, that was a huge reason why McCaffrey got drafted high, even though he was only like 210. Mm-hmm. Love's not going to be as heavy as him. I don't think he's going to be as tall or as well-built as McCaffrey. He's already been banged up for a college football season. He's going to get a lot of wear and tear on his frame. There just aren't, I mean, honestly, any starting running backs in the NFL at the sizes that he's listed at right now. So his size will be big kind of moving forward. He's going to be fast. I think he's going to run really well in the 40. But again, contact balance is like the most, you know, contact balance and the ability to contribute as a receiver and a pass protector are really important. He's actually an okay pass protector, but not much as a receiver so far at Stanford. So I don't think that changes a lot this year, and I think you're going to see him go off the board sometime on day two, but I don't think he'll be a top 32 pick.
Interesting. All right, John, thanks for coming on. Let people know where they can find your work on the internet.
Absolutely. Yeah, my work's over at thedraftnetwork.com, and then, of course, as co-host of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with Trevor Sikkema 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. You can find my work there, and you can follow me on Twitter at Ledyard, L-E-D-Y-A-R-D, NFL Draft.
All right, thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com is the email address. You can follow me on Twitter at SteelerCountry. And remember, the roster cuts are happening today. They will happen by 4 p.m. And I'll be back on Monday to review the 53-man roster right here on Locked On Steelers.